Hello, hello. It is Celeste with the Sales Edge Pod. I'm here with April Palmer, and I'm so excited. A funny story, and then I'm going to let April introduce herself. I have seen April on the LinkedIn, right? The mothership of business networking and connecting. And I was so scared to reach out to her because she has such a big personality. I had imposter syndrome, and I thought, what if she doesn't connect with me? Do I have anything to say? And then a turn of events. She walks up to our booth at Saster in September, and she's this tiny little peanut, and we hugged, and it was just like an awesome moment of like, oh my gosh, we're just two women, right? Like shooting the shit, like not even a big deal. Get out of your own freaking head. And here she is on the podcast. So tell us a little bit about yourself, all your roles, everything that you're working on.
Yeah, all the things. Okay. First of all, like what's hilarious about this is I've heard a couple of people say that they like worry about reaching out to me. And I would like everyone to just know that I'm the most, like, there's a reason why all of my social media is called Hot Mess Boss, because I'm like, I'm a fucking disaster. Wait, yeah, can I say that? Did I ask you? Yeah. I am like, I'm a fucking disaster, and I'm so down to earth, both because I'm short and also because that's my personality. And so like, unless you're going to send me a picture of your genitals, then, which is like not allowed, then connect with me because I love meeting new people. And I totally fangirled over you in return. And so it was so fun.
Yeah, it's awesome. And we're very similar in age, you know, both have kids. It's just, you realize the stories that you make up in your head are not what's happening in real life. So yes, thank you for being human and going with the flow.
It's true. We're so human. And I tell myself fake stories all the time. And I actually have a sticky note by my desk right here that says, are you telling yourself a true story? And I have to read that to myself on a regular basis because my anxiety lies to me a lot. Or maybe it doesn't.
It doesn't. I was so impressed when you started talking about surfing and now you have this podcast and you have this new idea for business. Oh, and now that you're an adjunct professor as well and you're traveling the globe and you have kids. And I'm like, where does she fit all of this in? So give us a brief synopsis of all of your roles, what you're encompassing and individuals you like connecting with.
Okay. So my real job, like my real actual day job that is the bread and butter for me, is I work for a company called Duckbill Group. We help companies optimize their AWS costs, both through their infrastructure and by helping them to renegotiate their contracts with AWS. So you're talking hundreds of millions to billions of dollars worth of contracts with AWS, and we help people pay Jeff Bezos less, which is like everybody wants to do that, right? It's amazing. Then I also teach part-time as an adjunct professor at VCU. We have a very small group within VCU called the Da Vinci Center, and we're like the island of misfit toys, which is really super fun. So we teach product innovation. We kind of marry like technology and sociology and anthropology and sales and revenue growth and entrepreneurship. So it's this kind of super awesome hodgepodge of ideas to help bring in the next generation of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs. And so like, that's exciting. And in fact, our team just got an award from Fast Company as we have been recognized as some of the world-changing ideas that we're putting out there in education. We're fucking slaying the game, which is so fun to be part of that team. Cause I'm like the weird one where I'm like, I don't know why you keep hiring me. But I look around, everybody else is so smart and like, good at what they do. If you want me to sit in a room and listen to what's going on with your business and throw like a couple of really good zinger ideas at you and then be like, peace out, I'm not, don't make me do that thing, it's just a great idea, then I'm super good at that. What else? I've got, holy fuck, I have three kids, 22, 22, and almost 18, one blind, six cats.
And you vacation. And off an epic vacation.
And I got one. So I work remotely because I can work from anywhere. So I just take my computer and I just fuck off to wherever I want to go. Most of the time it's a surf destination. So I just got home from 2 weeks with my parents in Portugal and I taught my parents how to surf, which is amazing. I did Amsterdam for 3 weeks earlier this year. I've done Costa Rica, Spain, Portugal, Canada. And I just take my board and whatever and just go.
That's awesome. And I think you touched on something, you know, looking back to the days when I was in college, there's a lot of theory. And the days that really stood out for me were either when you had to go somewhere and do something and like put it into practice, or someone from this like fictitious outside world that you didn't even know of because you're in this box for 4 years came in and unleashed about the real world. And you're thinking like, what? How is it? Like I'm sitting here with all this theory, which sounds great, but now we're talking about real life and practice. So I think that while you may feel like an outsider, this is relevant to what is happening. Like someone who is in the trenches and working, I have no clue. I have an AWS account and I used to put things in the cloud when I don't know, back before. And I taught myself how to do it, but I don't understand it at all. So I can only imagine these companies, they don't get it either. So the practical side of teaching our next generation entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs, they probably love that you have like the ins and outs of the real world.
Right. And I don't sugarcoat things. I mean, I know we're getting ready. We're here to talk about sales. And this, I think, is across the board for me is I read this article by Simon Sinek once, and he talked about surrounding yourself with people who will give you real feedback rather than the feedback that you want to hear. And so in my mind, I translated this to like, be a person who gives a fuck about other people's success so much that you will tell them the real story, whether that's like what really happens in entrepreneurship or like what's actually going to happen if they don't change things in their business when I'm trying to sell them things, which is actually like, I'm not really good at selling people things. I'm just kind of like there and help facilitate the process for them to get to where they need to be. But this is one of the things that I do with teaching too. Like I taught one of the myths that people say all the time is like, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. And that's the biggest honk of bullshit I've ever heard in my life. Do what you love. You won't sleep because your brain won't turn off. You'll get an ulcer. You'll lose your hair, maybe your marriage and like all of your money and like most of your sanity, right? So it has to be worth it. And I think it's the same thing when we go into sales and these sales conversations is like, you have to be able to say to the people on the other side of the table, like, I'm going to give you the real skinny. And if you, whether you like it or not, right. And like, that's it. And you do with that information what you want. If that's buying from me, awesome. If it's not buying from me, also awesome. Most of the time, that means I'll see you again in 6 months and I'll charge you double. But like, fine.
Yeah. And I think that comes from, we talk a lot about that on our team as well, like totally detaching from the outcome, going in and saying, hey, the agenda for this call is this, whether you work with us or not, I'm here to like drop value, to show you, to uncover, like you do with that information, whatever you want. I'm not going to sugarcoat it because if I can help you and you go work with someone else, like I still showed up and provided value and credibility. But often in sales, right, we're so attached to that outcome and getting the sale that we are icky and we don't provide any value.
Right. Trickle down economics in practice, right? Like leadership says we have to, and it makes sense, right? We have to have a certain amount of money to run a business, full stop. But then that trickles down to sales quotas, and sales quotas get so ingrained in what salespeople are doing on a day-to-day basis that it's really, really hard to step back and say, you know what, I'm just here to do what's best for my customer and client and make sure that at the end of the day, the promises that I'm making, like we can deliver on those promises, or I can hook them up with somebody who can. But it's hard to be able to do that if you work for an organization that's really attached to activity metrics and hitting certain quota milestones in specific right. ways. And that for me is a really hard reality to face that we kind of live in today from a sales world, because I believe that if you do the right things and you do them consistently for as many people as you possibly can, that like goals don't really matter. You'll sell as much as you can, yeah. right? End of the day. And so I never look at my goal really other than to know like, am I hitting some accelerators so I have some fun money? Did I do something, right? But like, it doesn't matter. If my goal is however many millions of dollars and I do the best that I can and I can sell half of that, that's literally the best that I can. And if I can look at myself in the mirror and be like, I did the best that I could and I worked to grow and learn and all of these things. And if I triple my quota, also like, cool story. That's the best that I could do. But unfortunately, organizations don't, you know, work on April quota.
Yes. And so we talk on this, you know, I ask a question, what is your sales edge? And I know you have many, like what makes you unique? What is different? What's a different approach? How would you answer that? Knowing that you just gave us some tidbits into like the April way, which is show up authentically and it kind of works itself out now or later. What would you say to that?
I think that my biggest edge is that I am probably one of the most curious people you have ever met. And so I walk into every sales call with this kind of like burning curiosity. And it has nothing to do with building a business case so that we can do an ROI, so that we can put together a proposal that knocks your socks off. Like that type of, great, it's awesome, right? I get it. That those things are important. That's what pays my bills and buys my plane tickets, which is really important. But like when I have a sales call, and right now I'm all 100% inbound right now. And so like, it's a little bit different, but even when I was outbound, I would do the thing where I would like get to somebody's website and I'd look and I'd be like, ooh, I don't know what they do. What does that mean? And then I would Google that. And then I would be watching videos and YouTube things and whatever, and become an accidental expert on some part of their business. And it didn't really matter if it had anything to do with what I was selling. If I could walk in and be like, hey, I was reading this and this happened. And then also, did you know that this company did that? And like all of a sudden people realize that I'm not necessarily there to sell them. I'm there to like partner with them. And I'm so curious about who they are and what they do that I'm also then going to dig into their problems and ask why, who, when, where, why, how, like as many times as I possibly can until I actually understand what's going on at the heart of the issue.
It's really like, and I think once you're channeling those three kids you had and, you know, early on, yes, when they're just like, well, why? Why? What about this, mama?
I'm kind of a toddler when it comes to sales. Like I'm genuinely excited to learn more. And then what's fun about that is when you end up going into other companies that do something similar or are somehow attached to it, then you get more and more knowledge. And that really legitimizes you in the face of your clients as well. But I think they just feel like you care about them.
Yeah, that genuine curiosity. Right? We talk a lot about that on a team. You'll hear it in our sales calls. We're like really curious about this. And it sounds to me like that sales edge, that genuine curiosity is what leads you versus any type of agenda or these are the questions I have to ask. It's really leading with curiosity about what is going on in a business so I can help them regardless of that outcome. And then in the process, yes, you're kind of getting that PhD as well and learning from each potential customer or everybody you have a conversation with. I love that. And so
I think one of the things that, because I know like you do so much with gap selling and I remember reading gap selling and it just like, I'm going to have a really honest moment with you all because this is what I do and who I am, is I fucking hate business books. Like they're the worst. They're awful. And because most of them should be called, it's common sense stupid, right? And so like I get all of these sales books and there's always a chapter on like send a follow-up email. Well, fucking duh, right? Like what year are we in? Sorry. But one of the things that I love about gap selling is that there, and like that stuck with me because I tend to get like one little gem out of everything. I think I got more than one, Kenan, sorry. But there's this, like, are you really uncovering a problem? We talked about this earlier, or are you uncovering an issue with a process? And like, cool story that you can fix an issue with a process. cool. Like, people will pay you for that. It's good business. It's great. But if you could actually uncover the problem, but more than that, what caused the problem and what is the ripple effect of the problem and who all is impacted by that and what that means to them. So for me, a lot of times, if I ask question and question and question, let's just talk about like AWS and Duckbill Group, I end up learning like, oh, we actually are planning to IPO in 18 months. And so it's really important for us to make sure that this contract is the appropriate contract with AWS so that we can publicize it during our IPO, because it gives our investors and future stockholders confidence that we have this partnership with AWS. That is why this is so important. Well, guess what? That is not a decision then for a VP of engineer right. to make. Like, and they don't value what we're doing. They won't pay what we want them to pay. So you've got to, because we may be easy, but we're not cheap. And, you know, so like, if you don't know those things, if you haven't figured out every person who's, and not like every person, right? But like enough people to get in and say, what's actually going on here rather than the surface level, then you're not doing it right. Unless your sole goal is volume, which is fine. Like that is a legitimate business and revenue growth tactic. It's just not the way that it works for me.
I love that. So it's like that curiosity around, what else is going on in the business? What else? What does this impact? How does that show up? Like, what are their future plans? Where are they to that? It's about asking a whole bunch of questions and realizing that that process, that sales cycle, all those conversations like may not be on your timeline. It could be a longer timeline, but when you're uncovering, could get more stakeholders involved, right? You may have to go back to the drawing board. It could be a bigger problem. They have to fix something else first before they can even chat with you. So I love all of that. Curious about a myth. I know you and I talked a little bit about these. We tend to put salespeople in boxes of salespeople need to be prospecting and doing this and sending cold emails or have a certain, right? Like, all of the stuff, which I was on a training earlier today and I can just see it, right? All the like followers of, no, we're going to do this process. No, just freaking be yourself. But what is a sales myth that you would love to bust right here on this show?
Okay, well, my very favorite sales myth that I love to bust, and it's like actually a business myth, is that you can't show up authentically, whatever that means for you. You can't say the word fuck, because I do. And if y'all ever look at my LinkedIn profile, if I haven't scared you off yet, it's in my headline twice, right? Like, it's fine. It's like, it's professional. But I think if you show up as yourself and not who you think that your client wants you to be or who you think that your boss wants you to be, then you're more likely to attract people who want to buy from you because they can feel your sincerity. But here's another one, and this was like actually my original one, because this is something that I would rather scrape my own nails down a chalkboard, if we remember what those are before whiteboards and like whatever, or like have someone untie my belly button without anesthetic before I did this. I like sign up for newsletters all the time. I want to see what other, this is the curiosity, right? Like I sign up for people's newsletters. I read them. I want to know what they're teaching people. I want to know what's happening in the sales world, in the business world. And one of the common themes that I get in my inbox all the time is how to take control of the sales call. Come on, y'all. Really? Do you think that your prospect wants you to roll up and be like, hey, I'm going to take control of this. You're going to talk about the things that I want to talk about on the timeline that I want to talk about them and the context that I want to talk about them in. Like, people fucking hate that. Do not walk into a sales call and think that you're going to take control of it. Like, you can build a framework for it. You can have goals for it. You can ask questions around what their goals are for it, all of those things. But like, if you're showing up to take control of a sales call, all that means is that you are word vomiting at your client and they potential client, and they are tuning you out and thinking about who is a better solution for them. And guess what? Like, it's probably status quo. Like, it's it's way easier to just keep doing what you're doing, even if it's painful, than it is to have to work with somebody who shows up like a fucking asshat on a sales call.
Yeah. And you know what? An interesting, this happened to us yesterday. We have an opportunity. They canceled, said what had happened, which is a death in the family. I reached out today saying, you know, had what other time, because they proposed a future date. Can we nail down a date? And then they sent me back some information about what was going on with the family. I was like, you know, my condolences. Obviously, that's most important. I could have kept pushing it, right? Like, we need to nail down a time. What date works for you? But I'm a human being and understand that when there's a death in the family, when something happens in a business, like, that's on their timeline. It's not on yours, right? Business goes on, but we're also human. So how do we honor that? And how do we want to be treated? We forget that in the sales process. Like, if someone was doing that to us, like, fuck off. I'm not going to buy from you.
Oh, my God.
Yet we do it every day.
It's such a horrible. I had about a year and a half ago. Is that right? About a year and a half ago or so, I was buying a new car. And, I've been in the automotive industry, and so I kind of know enough about it, right? But also, I'm very aware of what I'm looking for whenever I'm buying. I'm like most of your buyers. I do hours, sometimes hundreds of hours of research on my own before I ever approach anyone to let them know that I'm looking to buy a thing, right? Like, I'm becoming my own expert in this. And so my number one buying criteria for a car, number one, was they had to offer concierge pickup and delivery with a loaner car to do my oil changes and other maintenance. Full stop. I work a lot. I travel a lot. I've got a lot of responsibilities. And the last thing I'm going to go do is go sit in a service area waiting room while somebody changes my oil. Not going to do it. And then I had decided that I wanted a Subaru. Like, my kids are getting ready to start driving and like all of that, which is hilarious because my oldest is 22 and she's had her learner's permit since 2018. And she still doesn't have her driver's license. She's never even taken the test. But so I was like, okay, we want a Subaru. So I started calling Subaru dealerships and I was like, hey, so here's the deal. I am specifically looking for one of these two models. I'd like to buy it in the next 2 weeks. My number one buying criteria, the thing that is going to make a decision for me, is whether or not you offer lifetime concierge pickup and delivery of this car for service. And it was amazing, the responses that I got. Like, I called five dealerships and four of them were men who answered, and I told them, and they're like, well, we don't do that, mm-hmm. but, and I was like, no, unless you're saying, but we will do it for you and we'll put it in writing. That's my number one. And they're like, oh, but we can give you this much off and this much. And I'm like, you know what? You're $3,000 off of MSRP doesn't work for me because my time is way more valuable than that over the lifetime of this vehicle. The last one I called is a female-owned dealership, Liza Borsch, who's amazing. And the woman I talked to said, yeah, we can do that for you. And I said, will you put it in writing? And they said, yeah, we'll put it in there. And like, you'll do it during the F&I process. We absolutely do it. And I was like, okay. And I literally drove out that night and bought a car. Full stop. And like, y'all, we have to listen. There's no that those other salespeople tried to take control of the conversation. But the fact of the matter is, I knew what I wanted. And most of your clients do too. What they're really looking for you to do is help them justify it, right? Like, or add insights to something that they didn't
or
know.
Think about, like, that there could be like a ripple effect to you or something that's happening in the industry that you have insights over. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. But
by the time you get in front of a buyer, they are pretty sure that they know what they want. And what they really want is for you to help them build an ROI. And you cannot build a business case. You cannot build an ROI unless you have more information. And so, like, stop trying to close them and start trying to help them build the business case to do what they already want to do.
I love this. And thank you so much for sharing your insights. I mean, we could probably talk for forever. So I know that this is just the beginning of many conversations, for individuals. Yeah. We will obviously link your LinkedIn here, but tell us quickly, who are you most interested in connecting with? So if that individual is watching or they have a referral, they can pass it your way.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, so from a Duckbill Group perspective, we help companies that are spending $500,000 or more a month on their Amazon Web Services costs and are looking to spend less or renegotiate their contract with AWS. Oftentimes, it's in the financial, insurance, hospitality industry, like, you know, kind of big companies. But more than that, and like really, truly, I just like cool people. Like, I actually teach how to LinkedIn as a class that I teach at VCU. And I always tell my students, I'm like, you can go find people who are your ICP. And this is like, this is actually shitty sales advice. So like, don't take this as sales advice. But for me, this is good life advice. Like, find cool people. Cool people know other cool people who also know cool people who know somebody in the industry who's like your ICP. I just love awesome, like raw, baller people, and I want to get to know them, and I want to consume their content on LinkedIn and like interact with those conversations, because that's what gives me life every day while I sit here in my home office with like my weird random heads. Can we notice this? Like, I've got a pink head. I've got, there's Julius Caesar with pencils sticking out of his back. I've got this little chalk thing. There's another head. Oh, there's a camel head.
From your travels. I'm sure. They're little trinkets.
Yes, but for some reason, disembodied heads are my thing.
Not a problem. And, you know, here we are, two ladies wearing our hoodies, showing you that you can show up authentically. I know, hoodies. You can, although it's like 77 degrees here right now, so I probably have to de-hoodie, showing you that you can show up as your authentic self, bust those myths, but also lead with value, and then connect with really awesome people because they know awesome people. And we chatted earlier today. You gave me some amazing advice. I'm going to connect you with someone in my network, and that's how it is done. Mm-hmm. So I truly appreciate you spending time with me today, and everybody can hear your story. Connect with April on LinkedIn, and we will see you next time.
Awesome. Thank you.